Eric Kim grew up the son of immigrants in Atlanta, Georgia. Meals were often a combination of his parents' Korean heritage and the lessons he learned watching the Food Network. He went on to become a food writer and journalist. He's now a columnist for the New York Times. But as he says in his new cookbook, Eric Kim has started making his way back home to Atlanta to find out how his mother cooks. It's called Korean American, and Eric Kim joins us now to talk about it. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is a beautiful cookbook, and as you say, it's also a memoir. You write about growing up in Atlanta with your parents who were Korean immigrants. And at that time, grocery stores didn't stock many Asian ingredients, so your mom just had to kind of make do. I'm curious how that shaped her cooking and yours.
There are things I took for granted growing up. Like, for instance, my mother loved jalapenos, and I used to think that jalapenos were a normal ingredient in Korean cooking, but I kind of just realized later, and the more I talked to her and my family, that they couldn't find guari gochu, which is like the Korean word for shishito pepper, and they couldn't find it when they first immigrated here, so they started using jalapenos and also a lot of Spam, a lot of meatloaf-flavored things. I love ketchup, you know, as someone who, someone who grew up in America, and ketchup goes really well with a lot of Korean food.
What was so wonderful in your book was reading about your relationship with your mother. And you talk about going back to Atlanta during the pandemic and spending time with your mom, cooking with her in the kitchen again. What was that like?
One kind of joke I like to make is getting a recipe out of my mother is like pulling teeth out of a tiger's mouth, because she's so different from me, really. She's... I'd like to think that, you know, she's incredibly intelligent emotionally, and the way that comes out is through her food when she's cooking by feeling. And I really think that someone who knows flavor well is also someone who knows people well. And these are these kind of realizations I had as I was able to watch her cook in an everyday kind of way.
You say getting a recipe from your mother is like pulling teeth from a tiger's mouth.
Yeah.
So she's really protective of her recipes.
No. Everyone thinks that's what I mean, but she just is bad at... she's bad at saying exactly what she's putting into the pot as she goes. And, you know, she doesn't have to be good at that. That's my job, really. And so that's the whole point of that essay. It's called The Tiger in the Hand, because my mom can be the tiger. She's the fiery cook. She's really fearless. But I'm the hand. I'm the writer. I'm the one who can kind of measure her genius. I talk about recipe development in that way, where it's, I'm not trying to put her in a box. I'm just trying to approximate those flavors so that home cooks can reproduce them, because I think they taste amazing. And so I want other people to be able to replicate her food. And the next best thing after her own hands cooking the food is a recipe that gets you there. And what better person to do that than a son?
I loved what you said. Someone who knows flavor well knows people well.
Yeah.
Is that something you can learn?
I think it can be learned, but not in the way that it seems. Cooking is a skill, sure. There are hard skills to learn. Like, I learned how to make kimchi very well during the writing of this book, but I always knew how to taste it. I always knew what to look for because I've been eating it my whole life. But also, I'm someone who, you know, I think I really have a sensitive palate, so I'm able to follow the flavor wherever it goes. And I love the way Nigel Lawson described this. She was talking about talent. And, you know, everyone thinks talent means skill, but actually it means voice. Talent is having a voice, having an opinion, you know. So when there's a dish that's, you know, that I have to develop, you know, having an opinion about what it should be is part of what makes someone talented. And my mom is full of talent, of course. Mm-hmm. She's got a lot of opinions about food. And I'm sure that's obviously where I got that as well.
You have an entire chapter about kimchi. In fact, you say kimchi is a verb. How am I going to kimchi that in my kitchen?
Yeah.
How central is it to your kitchen?
Oh, it's becoming more and more common, because kimchi as a pantry staple is an incredible ingredient to cook with. You know, my mom always sauteed kimchi in a little sesame oil and soy sauce, a little pinch of sugar. Sometimes there's Spam in there. I have a little stir fry in the book with green cabbage that... Oh man, it's just so good. When you're matching green cabbage with kimchi, which is fermented cabbage, they both just like echo each other, and speak to each other. And so in this way, I think that kimchi is something that is a very powerful flavor ingredient that you use in your food. And I want people to cook their kimchi more because cooked kimchi tastes really different from fresh. Mm. And there are so many permutations that are possible there.
All right. So beyond kimchi, give us three or four ingredients that are really essential to have in your pantry or refrigerator to give dishes a Korean flavor.
I would say gochugaru. Gochugaru is a Korean red pepper powder. It's actually what you use to make red napa cabbage kimchi. What I love about gochugaru is that it offers you that pepper taste in a very clean way. But what I really also want to tell people is that it's actually not that spicy. It's more aromatic. Okay, I'll do two more real quick.
Okay.
Doenjang. People try to call it Korean miso, but doenjang has its own flavor. It's funky. It's also fermented, but it's also very pure. It's a pure soybean taste. And I really like using that, not just in stews, which is, you know, kind of the traditional way to use it in Korean food, but it's a nice texture. It's a paste. So it's really great to glaze a piece of cod. Or I love just giving it to people on a spoon with honey so that they can learn what exactly it is. A third one is seaweed. So there are many kinds of seaweed products, but I love kim. Kim is just roasted seaweed. It'll be marketed as roasted seaweed snack, and it's really great as a chip, you know, just to eat. But it's also incredible, just crumbled into some grits. I've even made a brittle out of it with maple syrup. Seaweed has so much umami and is a very powerful ingredient, and it's in all my cooking.
And roasted seaweed avocado toast. I loved that one in the book.
Yeah, that one tastes really good. It's really easy to make as well. Yeah.
And a lot of the dishes in the book are typically American with just a touch of Korean flavor, right? The ribeye with the gochujang butter, right?
Yeah. There's a little bit of playfulness in the American, quote-unquote American recipes that have Korean pantry items. But then there are also Korean recipes like the lemon pepper bulgogi. Bulgogi is a Korean marinated beef dish, but, you know, I wanted to inject some Atlanta into there. And so there's a homemade lemon pepper seasoning, and the marinade happens after with, like, lemon juice and, like, quick-pickled shallots. And I think a Korean person might come to that dish and be like, this isn't Korean, but my argument is that it's just as Korean because it's Korean-American. It's my take on that dish that has many, many, many iterations.
What did you discover about yourself and about your Korean-American identity through these recipes?
I think I found out how much I had been straddling the two versions of myself. You know, there's a lot of code switching that happens when you grow up Korean in a predominantly white American neighborhood. And Atlanta was like that, or the neighborhood I grew up in. So I felt, oh my God, it's just like a sigh of relief, you know? It's something that makes me cry every time I see the cover in a bookstore. It's so wonderful to see yourself on the page. It's something that I feel very strongly about. And really my hope is that other Korean Americans will see this and feel finally represented and feel seen, because you don't have to straddle, you know? You can just stand tall on your 2 feet. It's a really, really wonderful feeling. It's a new feeling for me.
Well, one thing that stands out in the book is that you're not only going back and finding your roots, discovering who you are through your mother's cooking, you're encouraging all of us to do the same with our family, cooking with our elders, with the older generation. Why is it so important to preserve our food heritage?
Oh, man. This was sort of a thesis that came about after 2 years of spending time with this book and with my mom. Cooking with her in an everyday kind of way, really just right next to her, watching her do something as simple as minced garlic, I was really able to kind of find these moments in which her past is a way of telling my story as well. Because her story tells how, you know, we came to eat the things that we eat. And so my thesis for this book has always just been like, write down your family recipes before it's too late. Those flavors are going to keep evolving as the generations move on. And what I really want people to know is that food tells your whole story, and that includes past and present and future. And I think that's a really important thing to know when you're in the kitchen, because food is a way to connect with the people we love.
Eric Kim's new book is Korean American: Food That Tastes Like Home. It's such a beautiful book and a pleasure to read. I look forward to cooking these recipes. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
And we have some recipes from the book, including one for what Eric calls the perfect jar of kimchi.